Okay, so we can call the meeting to order. So can I get a motion to approve the minutes from August 13th?
So moved.
Any seconds?
Second.
Okay. And then here we are at public comment. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed? I'm already forgetting all the rules, and I did take that training, so I should know. So, okay, public comment. Anyone? No one here? Okay. Okay, local option sales and service tax.
Yeah, we have Kirk Lehman from the city manager's office. He's going to come take my spot to go through this, and I'll be back.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting me to be part of your meeting. Happy to be here. I'm Kirk Lehman, assistant city manager. So we have a broader perspective of this city than the Parks Department. Obviously, we look at all aspects of the city and try to make sure that things are operating smoothly and efficiently and that services are getting done and that the budget's getting passed and working with council. So we're really that interface between city council and the rest of the city organization. And what I'm here to talk to you today about is the local option sales tax. So you may have heard of this before. You may not have. Local option sales tax is essentially an additional 1% tax on sales. And the reason that we're talking about it is really City Council's strategic plan that they recently adopted. They were looking at alternative revenue sources. You may or may not know, but many of our revenues that we get at Iowa City are tied to property taxes. So that means the taxes you pay on your property, that commercial property owners pay, and that industrial property owners pay as well. However, we're very, very dependent on that property revenue source. And what we've seen at the state level is tax reforms to the property taxes that have restricted our ability to generate revenue. So when looking at those issues, City Council in their strategic plan, note that local option sales tax is one of those revenue sources that we can use and have been exploring it more and more. And this year was really the year that it came to a head. So as I had mentioned, there have been numerous state property tax reforms that have happened. We've seen our revenues squeezed and from around 2015 to around 2018, we were able to get enough property tax valuation growth that we didn't feel a lot of those reforms. That is no longer the case. In 2022, the state just passed additional reforms, which means that we are no longer able to capture as much of the growth as we have historically been able to capture. And so we are reaching a point where we have to look at this more holistically in terms of those other revenue sources and diversifying that. Another issue that we've seen is really since the pandemic, a lot of our property tax or property valuation growth has not been as strong as it has in the past. So we've seen, while we do have large buildings coming online, we still haven't seen the growth that we need to be able to see the growth of our tax base that would improve our revenues. And at the same time, we've seen the inflationary pressures that you have experienced with things like City Park Pool, where a dollar just doesn't go as far as it used to, and that's going to continue to be the case as we're facing a lot of these pressures. So because of all of this, these financial headwinds that we're facing, lost is really that next best revenue source that we think we can use to boost revenues and improve our revenue outlook. And it really dives into the general fund as well. So Parks and Rec is a general fund funded program. You do get some fees for your programs, but obviously as part of your outlook is to try and make sure that our programs are accessible. So we try to limit fees. Lost is an ability to specifically generate general fund revenue. So what is lost? I mentioned it briefly, but it's really a 1% sales tax that would go on taxable value. The state of Iowa already has a 6% sales tax that's levied on most sales. But the state does allow us to have a 1% tax that is used locally. So one of the benefits of the sales tax is it allows us to capture visitor spending to this Iowa City. And we are fortunate in that we have lots of visitor spending in Iowa City, but it does require approval by both city council and then a majority of voters. So the process by which this occurs is city council makes a vote, votes a resolution that says we want to put this on the ballot. And then on the ballot or election day, November 4th is the upcoming election. That is when the voters have an opportunity to weigh in and say, yes, this is something that we support, or no, we don't. As part of council's resolution, they did propose specific uses, and that's required by state law. And I'll touch base on what those are in a minute. Now, one other thing that I want to mention is that with sales tax in Iowa, a lot of basic necessities are exempted from the sales tax. So you see things like housing expenses, specifically rent and mortgage payments, utilities, those are not subject to loss. You have things like groceries, you have things tied to vehicles and transportation. So vehicles aren't affected by lost. Gasoline isn't affected by lost. And then you also have health products such as prescription drugs, feminine products, et cetera. What we have seen in Iowa is that more and more communities have looked at lost as a way to make up some of the lost revenues that they've been seeing with property taxes. So currently 93% of jurisdictions do have lost across Iowa, and that is more than 1,000 jurisdictions, including almost every other major city in Iowa, with the exception currently of Iowa City and Ankeny. So it is a widely used source, and it's becoming more widely used as these property tax reforms are going into effect. So what does that look like in Iowa City then? Well, we do have a relatively substantial base of taxable retail sales that we would be able to utilize or receive lost dollars for. However, the way that it works is it really functions at a county level. So as revenue is spent in individual jurisdictions, those jurisdictions that have opted into lost pool the resources, and then it's reallocated based on a formula based on population and property tax base, which means that only those participating jurisdictions receive the funds that are created within those communities. Now, why do I bring this up? Because the amount that Iowa City would receive could vary pretty widely depending on what other communities choose to participate in lost. Currently in Johnson County, I'll talk a bit about which jurisdictions have it, but there are several small jurisdictions that have it. Notably absent from that are Iowa City, North Liberty, and Coralville. Now, all three cities have put lost on the upcoming November 4th election. And so depending on which jurisdictions adopt it, it would affect how much revenue Iowa City can generate. Currently, we're anticipating somewhere in the ballpark of 8 to 10 million if only Iowa City adopts it. If, for example, Coralville adopts it, which has a large number of retail sales, we would expect that to be substantially higher. If other communities adopt it, but Coralville doesn't, it might be a little lower. So it's really a range, and it varies depending on what communities participate. One other factor with lost is that the amount of revenue you can get or the amount of sales that happen in a county vary widely depending on the economic conditions. So it's a volatile source of income. For example, during the Great Recession, you see a large drop in it in communities where they're more dependent on property sales rather than property taxes. That really adds some volatility to the way that works. For us, we still will be dependent on property taxes with a loss, but it really provides supplemental revenue that we can use for community priorities that have been identified by council. And then another factor, again, is just that visitors do contribute to lost because they contribute to our property tax sales. We tend to have lots of folks that travel into our community, especially on game days, that spend a lot of money. Currently, that does not contribute to the public services that the city of Iowa City provides. Instead, it's mostly funded by property taxes. So this would balance who is providing revenue to the city. And Iowa City has had a history with lost. So that includes a successful lost referendum, which happened from 2010 to 2013. That was following the flood of 2008, and it was primarily intended to fund flood mitigation projects. It produced approximately $34 million. We had some major projects that came out of that, including the Dubuque Street reconstruction, also called the Gateway Project. We had the expansion of the South Wastewater Treatment Facility, which occurred, and then the Riverfront Crossings Park. So we really view Lost as an opportunity to have some transformative changes as you get a large influx of cash. And without Lost, really, these projects would not have occurred. So it can be a transformative funding source. Following that, the city put Lost back on the ballot in 2014, and that one did not pass. At that time, all contiguous jurisdictions had to approve Lost at the same time, and Iowa City voters would have approved Lost, but voters in Coralville and North Liberty would not have, and so it did not pass within the metropolitan area. Since that time, that rule has changed, and so now Lost is determined on a city-by-city basis, and that is why Iowa City, Coralville, and North Liberty are independently considering it. And just to give you an idea of what it looks like in other cities that have adopted Lost, like I said, pretty much all major cities in Iowa have Lost, with the exception of Ankeny. A lot of them use it for property tax relief. When the change was made that allows cities to independently adopt Lost, that did become a requirement where 50% of Lost funds has to be used for property tax relief now. That was not a requirement in the past. So you do see some, like Cedar Rapids, where 100% is dedicated to street repair. That would no longer be possible with current state law. But you see common uses like property tax relief. You see a lot of street and infrastructure repair. You see a lot of community facilities or community improvement initiatives, and then capital improvements. And really that's because Lost is, as a funding source, is really good for capital improvements because it can be a volatile source. On the flip side, it can be really difficult to use it for operational funds when you don't know how many funds you'll have are. And so it really has benefits for those sort of one-time payments or recurring programs that can increase or decrease without having to cut staff or hire staff and have that constant fluctuation of staffing levels. Within Johnson County, one other thing I want to note is that sunsets. So when we adopted it in 2010, we did have a sunset that was a part of our Lost. It was a four-year program at that time. And we proposed, I believe, a 10-year with that 2014 referendum. What we have seen is that many communities have started, as they've continued to renew their Lost, they've gone away from having sunsets because of those challenges that they're seeing on their financial horizons. So what you'll see with our proposal, or the proposal that'll be in front of voters on November 4th, is that sunset is no longer present. And you'll see that in Johnson County communities as well. So during that 2014 referendum, there were several communities in Johnson County that adopted Lost. So you'll see many of them adopted it in 2015, which is when that Lost became effective. Many of those had a 10-year sunset, and they have since gone back and re-upped it without a sunset. Again, you'll see property tax relief being common. And another common use that you're seeing now is any lawful purpose. So they are providing themselves with the utmost flexibility moving forward. That is not the direction that Iowa City has chosen to go. We are allocating our funds towards specific purposes as reflected in the ballot language. And that provides some certainty to voters as to what those funds will be used for. But again, you'll see many similar uses as well. So what will be on the November 4th ballot for Iowa City specifically? What you'll see is 50% is being proposed for property tax relief. I'll talk a bit about what that specifically means, because that's a kind of nebulous term. But then in addition to that, 25% for affordable housing, 10% for public streets, parks, and facilities, and 15% for community partnerships. Now, the way that council arrived at those numbers was a variety of factors. So first, there's state law, obviously. Second, there was a community survey that was conducted last year. And one of the questions on that community survey included, you know, what might you support a lost revenue going towards? Some of the top ones that we saw were kind of your basic infrastructures, so streets, for example. You also saw a strong support for social service expenditures, affordable housing expenditures, Affordable housing, streets, and parks was another popular one, as you might expect. Now, the other factor that really played a role in how council allocated this was the fact that lost can have a disproportionate impact on low-income households. One positive thing with the way that Iowa's lost is structured is that many of those essential expenditures that I noted already aren't subject to sales tax, so that really helps. But council really wanted to make sure that the expenditures that are coming in can also really benefit those low-income populations. So also capturing that visitor spending to use for some of our really critical needs that we see with regards to those vulnerable populations, that was a big part of what drove this. So especially that affordable housing piece, and then as far as public streets, parks, and facilities, that really does allow us to continue to have low fees and low barriers to entry and participation with our public services. And then for community partnerships, many of those do serve those populations. So I'll go a bit more detail into what each of those things are and how we are conceptualizing these being used. At the end of the day, the way that it will be allocated would be based on each budget year as part of our public budget process. City Council will say specifically, this is how we're gonna use lost dollars this year. So it is an annual process, but they would have to fit within these buckets, so to speak. So property tax relief is the first and biggest portion. The ballot language is just 50% for property tax relief. Pretty, like I said, can be interpreted a lot of ways, but is simple language. So what might that mean? That can really mean one of two things. First, it can mean direct reductions to the property tax rate. So instead of funding some general public services from our property taxes, we shift some of that burden to lost. Now, the other thing that can incorporate is property tax avoidance. So what that means is minimizing future borrowing, which would otherwise increase property taxes, property tax rates, or other levies. So in some cases, for example, with City Park Pool, or other large project rec centers a lot of the time, you'll bond for projects, which is then repaid with property taxes. Instead of bonding, you can use lost to help avoid that additional tax that would pop on a property tax rate, and therefore it helps with that property tax avoidance. So again, each year, City Council will kind of determine that proportion, whether that's more property tax reduction or property tax avoidance. That's an annual process. Yeah.
Question on that one. So you're saying if you could, instead of bonding for a large project, say that's in the parks pool, you would do the tax relief where you'd be putting those funds towards that potentially instead of bonding it?
Correct.
But would that also fall under the 10% that then you are allocating potentially to parks with the public streets, parks? How do you divvy out if it's a project that also you would bond out, but it falls within public streets, parks?
Yeah. Parks? No, that's a great question. So these categories are broad. There is some overlap where something could fit within one or another. For example, you could imagine a lot of community partnerships and affordable housing things could be really similar. One of the things that council wanted to preserve was some flexibility in the future, just because there isn't a proposed sunset as part of this. So 20 years down the line, who knows what the needs of the city will be? There has to be some flexibility there. For example, if another pandemic comes up and we need to pivot and try to figure out, you know, how can we try to address some of these pressing needs that we never anticipated, that flexibility is there. So could some of this property tax relief go to parks in addition to some of that 10% that's dedicated towards that infrastructure facilities bucket? Yeah, that's possible. It just is flexibility within how these categories overlap. And again, that would be detailed annually as part of the budgeting process.
Got it. Thanks.
The next amount is affordable housing. So the ballot language specifically is 25% shall be used to preserve existing affordable housing stock, increase shelter and transitional housing supports, and increase access to and the supply of affordable housing for households with low incomes. So housing generally was really a category that all of the communities wanted to address collectively. Well, Coralville and North Liberty have very different categories that they are proposing as part of their lost ballot initiatives. They did include a provision where affordable housing or housing generally could be an expenditure. And a lot of that was really encouraged by Greater Iowa City. They were actually the ones who approached all the cities and said, hey, we think that you have to do lost because what we're seeing is a lot of these programs that go out to the community, they're facing pressures that they haven't in the past, and we want to make sure that those are possible. And we want to try and address some of these regional challenges that we face, like affordable housing. Iowa City, of course, being Iowa City, we wanted to go a step further. And so we really dedicated it to affordable housing. We really dedicated it to those low-income individuals, again, to try to mitigate some of those impacts to vulnerable populations that you can see with the sales tax. So obviously, this fits really well in with City Council's strategic planning, and it had a high level of support in our community survey. And so that's why we allocated 25%, a pretty large chunk of that, a discretionary pot of lost funds for affordable housing. Now, another broad category is kind of what I call public infrastructure and public facilities. So that specifically is listed in the ballot language as maintenance and construction of public streets, sidewalks, trails, parks, and facilities as designated by City Council. So it does support many strategic council goals, including maintenance related to a lot of our core facilities, core services that we provide. And it fits into a lot of the support that we saw in the community survey as well. Now, what might that look like? It's a really broad category, right? So we've identified a number of needs over the years that Iowa City really needs to invest in. Continued investment of parks is, of course, always an important priority. Rec centers are getting older and need continued investment. And we're seeing other facilities as well that have substantial needs, things like our senior center, which has substantial interior improvements that we have to figure out how to fund. We have needs for a new fire station one. We actually paused the plan for a fifth fire station because we are concerned about our revenue outlook operationally. And so we are looking at how we can best serve the city with a four station model rather than a five station model. But a new fire station one is a need that we've identified. And then, of course, there's always large street projects that have come up, and our street rehab program as well, which has also seen relatively stagnant funding. So it's a broad category, again, that would be determined on an annual process. But looking at all those needs, we wanted to make sure that there is some funding available for those needs. And then finally, community partnerships. The language is 15% shall be used for community partnerships, including but not limited to partnerships that support intergovernmental, economic development, arts and culture, and social service priorities as designated by City Council. So we in Iowa City are lucky that we have all sorts of great partnerships with all sorts of communities. We regularly fund arts and cultural activities, as you know. We're obviously a city of literature. We regularly fund and have increasingly increased the amount of funds that we provide for social services that really benefit those low-income households. We've been trying to improve our inclusive economic development programs a lot of these things have been funded by ARPA funds. So really trying to replace ARPA funds, expand what we've been able to do and can continue some of our momentum that we really have currently. Again, that's related to high levels of support that we've seen in our community survey, as well as our strategic plan goals. And so those are the buckets of funds that will be on the November 4th ballot language. Should that be approved, that's where Iowa City could expect 8 to 10 million, potentially more, depending on what communities participate, to fund those sources. So you would expect roughly $1 million per 10%, or potentially more, depending on what communities participate. So what does the timeline look like going forward? Well, August 5th is when council formally adopted its resolution that puts it on the November 4th ballot. The auditor was notified shortly after and notice was published. So now it's really a matter of early voting starting October 15th, with the actual election itself being November 4th. When would the lost potentially be enacted? It would be enacted July 1st of next year is the earliest that would occur. So we're really in the informational stage, and that's why we're trying to talk with our various boards and commissions about what is lost, what's going to be on the November 4th ballot, and what might that mean for Iowa City. And we want to make sure that you have an opportunity to ask questions and go into that election informed and aware of what the implications are of a lost. So I know that's a lot of information. And I am happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I have a question.
Yeah.
At the beginning, you talked about how at the state level of reform, dialing back along property tax, you been able to quantify how much we would be losing on those reforms, comparing that to the 8 to 10 million potential projection?
Sure. So, yes. We've quantified each one individually. So when I say state property tax reforms, I'm talking about, I would say, maybe four different reform packages that have occurred over the past, really since 2013 is when it started. The biggie was the reduction of how multifamily properties are taxed. So in Iowa City, as you all know, we have lots of multifamily properties. They used to be taxed at the commercial rate, which is 100% of their tax rate or of their property tax valuation. That's been reduced over the 10 years down to the residential rate, which is less than 50%. So that right there is probably the biggest lost revenue source that we've seen where it's been a challenge. That has fully been phased in now. I do not have that number off the top of my head, but I could follow up if you're interested in that. We've had other ones more recently that have essentially limited our ability to capture growth. So if you grow by a certain percentage, then we have to automatically reduce our property tax rate by a certain percentage, which limits our ability to capture that growth. That's why we were able to somewhat grow out of that multifamily property tax change, but that is going to be a challenge moving forward. And the state has again been talking property taxes, and we expect something to pass next year. We don't quite know what that looks like, but it's those discussions that add a lot of uncertainty into what we might be looking at in the future, and have prompted a city council to put this on the ballot sooner rather than later, so that that there might be more flexibility moving forward.
So from a commission standpoint, say lost passes and we know that 10% of that revenue will be allocated for parks and the other, that one bucket, will staff, like the Parks and Rec staff, come to us? Or maybe this is a question for Julie, I'm not sure. Like who determines what that 10% is going to? Does city staff come to us with a proposal, we decide whether it's good, and then it gets kicked back to council, or?
I'll let Kurt.
I'll let Julie start, and then I'll correct if there's anything else.
We would likely follow our capital improvement process like we are now. So we come to you with getting ideas, gathering ideas, staff then inputs our CIP, which we just, you know, talked about last month, and we just put those in, and we have many, many, many more requests than there's funding for. So that first couple rounds of requests will likely be from the unfunded lists that you've already seen and heard about. So,
yeah, and that's essentially what I was going to answer. Really, what we see this as is a way to accelerate some of the projects that we are able to do. So there's obviously lots of things on the unfunded list, and this provides an opportunity for us to do more realistically.
Yeah. With the size of the tourism and visitor income here, why are hotel and motels exempt from loss?
So they're exempt from lost primarily because there's a different tax that applies to hotels, motels. It's the same as gas has its own. So certain things have their own taxes and aren't subject to sales tax. That's really why. So the revenue that we would get primarily from visitors are folks who are eating out, who are getting tickets, who are, you know, doing any number of things in the community, with the exception of the hotel, motel, which is already subject to a tax. And in Iowa, there's a limit on the amount of each tax that we can do. We are at the maximum hotel motel limit. Lost is one of those few options that we have left. The other one, which goes to utilities, why utilities is exempt. The other one is our franchise fees, which are tied to electric and gas utilities. That tax is capped at 5%. We are currently at 2%. We just increased it this last year in order to help continue our fare free transit program. That one is a much smaller pot of funds that you can obtain compared to the 8 to 10 million. That's more like a million for each percent that you get. So this is really our last large source of revenue that we have access to. Realistically.
So it's a state cap on what we can charge for hotel motel?
Yes.
Really?
And on local option sales tax and on property tax rates. So in Iowa, the way that our tax system works is we don't have the ability to tax whatever we want. We are essentially given some options, and we can choose what within the parameters set by the state we want to tax. And that's really what we're limited to. So it can be a real challenge when we have some of these caps set by the state to expand services in a growing community. Some of that is funded as you get more properties that are built. You know, some of that's funded, but it has been a challenge for us, especially with these other reforms ratcheting back what we can capture.
UI property is all tax exempt, is that right?
UI property is tax exempt.
We get any compensatory balance from state or anybody about that?
No. What we do, we have some agreements with them on certain services. So, for example, we get funds from them for our providing them fire services. A lot of their services they provide themselves. So, for example, they have their own police force, they have their own transit, a lot of those sorts of things, which is what is their justification, I believe, generally, and they're a state entity. So they're not, we have no zoning control. We have no say over anything that they do.
Has there been an attempt to do that kind of compensatory thing for the state university cities in the history of Iowa, or is that just never?
Go ahead. So there are examples in other states where you see fees in lieu of taxes, or trying to think of what it's called. It's called pilot, but it's essentially that they do payments in lieu of taxes. That has not been a discussion in Iowa. But what we have seen recently is that a lot of university properties are being leased. Now, leased properties are privately owned, and so we do get tax revenue from that. So a lot of recent expansions that we see our leased properties, so we do get some tax revenue, which has been a nice change in the way that that's worked. It is a challenge, but I mean, to be fair, Iowa City wouldn't be what it is today without the university, and so we do try to strike that balance between being partners, but also understanding that we have services to provide and that those services are going to our university folks as well.
Thanks.
Is there any chance that, I don't know, the powers that be in the state could mess with how we allocate the funds that we get, or heck, change the 1%, you know, it could cut off after a year or something like that? Is there any chance that could?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So realistically, any taxes that we do are subject to state changes. The state has already proposed to collect lost at the state level and then allocate it to local governments. The League of Cities has concerns with that, just because in the past, one thing I didn't mention with all the property tax reforms is we got backfill payments, which made up for some of the lost taxes that we were getting. Those were also phased out over time. So a lot of the times when the state had said, we'll make you whole, that's been a limited time process for us. So there are concerns that that would happen. But what we've seen with local option sales tax, it's pretty widely used. It's relatively popular at the state level, I would say, whereas property taxes have been an area of concern at the state level. So we haven't seen changes to communities that have already implemented lost. So that's why you have some of those that don't have the 50% to property tax relief. They were able to maintain their allocations that they had, but all of that is subject to change at any time. So as a city, we are a entity of the state.
Well, this is just curious, it has nothing to do with who or what department were the ambassadors who went to North Liberty and Coralville and kind of told them maybe it'd be good to get on board.
It was Greater Iowa City. So as the city, we are not permitted under state law to advocate for the approval of a lost. Our role is really informational. And so that's really why I want to reach out to the boards and commissions to make sure that you understand your role, that as questions come, you still have the opportunity as an individual to advocate on a position either way. But I want to make sure that you are fully informed in your role as the Parks Commission about what it means and what the impacts would be one way or the other. So Greater Iowa City has taken an advocacy role, and they really encouraged Coralville and North Liberty to act at the same time as Iowa City. Initially, it was unclear as to which communities would be interested in participating, but Greater Iowa City is really spearheading an advocacy effort.
What is Greater Iowa City?
So it used to be the Chamber.
Yeah, so it was kind of a combination of the Chamber, and then there was a group called ICAD, and so they had essentially the economic development entities within Iowa City. They used to distinguish between kind of internal facing that local business development versus bringing in outside businesses. They have since combined into a unified group.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Kirk. That was really informative.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. All right. So next we have reports on items from city staff. So Julie up first.
All right. A couple things. First of all, raise your hand if you have done this training for the open meetings law. We've got one, two, good. Okay, we understand it's been difficult to get in, that there's been very limited spaces on the online web, or the way you have to do it. So, sorry for those of you that already got it. For those of you that haven't, we're gonna have an option here in Iowa City. And it will be on Monday, September 29th. From 6 to 7:30, you'll get an email tomorrow with all the details, but it'll be from 6 to 7:30 out at Terry Trubud Lodge. It'll be an in-person training. So you're welcome to attend again if you'd like to.
Like, I got it.
You got it. You're good. That's good. Yeah. There's pizza, but or something. Sorry. And realize it's required as far as, I know the information went out that if you don't get the training, there is a penalty involved, a financial penalty. That's only if you'd been appointed since July 1, which is no one around this table. Our city council has said beyond that, they want everyone to go through the training. So it's a local city requirement that everyone goes through. You're not, you wouldn't face the civil penalty if you didn't get it since you'd been appointed before that. So does that make sense to everyone that we want to encourage everyone to get that training done? We'll get you this information about the one here. And there is a couple, there are a couple more online, but you have to be like ready to register the second those open to get in. So we realize that. Watch for an email from Gabe tomorrow or the next day with the information on that. That makes sense? Yes.
The iPad video guy is really good. I was really impressed with the depth and the breadth of his presentation. If you want to do the Zoom, or the, it's not Zoom, but the Zoom-like thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So I know that there's one on the 29th. If someone's unable to make that one, I know that like ISU Extension has offered a paid.
Okay.
You have to pay for that's like $50 or something. But is there any talk of potential if somebody has to go to one of those, reimbursement from the city for that?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that the frustration across boards and commissions is high. So there's a frustration of getting into very limited classes versus the city asking you to do that. So I think it's definitely worth asking the question. I can find out, but I haven't heard an answer. I haven't heard that before. So it seems like every day more training options are being offered. All of a sudden they're gearing up and so we can do this. But I appreciate it. I know it's one more thing out of your schedules that you have to do, but we do appreciate that. Speaking of terms, there's three of you that have terms that are ending at the end of this year. So that would be Missy, Connie, and Brian, who's not here tonight. Your terms will expire at the end of December. So it will be on next Wednesday's council or Tuesday's council meeting to open up applications for the filling those spots. So you're welcome. I don't remember if you've got another term you can do or not, but I'd have to check.
To apply again.
Okay, so yes, you all three can apply again. So yeah, there we go. I always forget. I should not forget to tell people that that's happening. Okay, today, if you've watched the news, we unfortunately, a person out at TTRA found a deceased body at the edge of the water line. We have very little information about that. They had been there for some, I don't know how long, but it wasn't immediately after the person was deceased. And this under a police investigation, there's been one press release with very basic information. The area was closed off from about noon until about 4 this afternoon. And all of the police tape, everything has been taken away now, and it is completely open. It's not in, it wasn't in an area that is in general public use. It's down, meaning that when I went out right after it was reported, I was up on the trail and I couldn't see anything that was happening. So it's down below near the water's edge, just to be really clear. We've had a couple rental groups ask about that in terms of rentals coming up yet this week in the lodge. We don't think that has an impact on the rentals, but we've given them the option of canceling if they didn't feel comfortable with that. So not a lot more that I know or that I could share if I did know, but that's about all we know on that right now. Other things that are happening in our park system, the summer projects are finally, the fences are down, the parks are open. So College Green Park is open and being lovingly used quite a bit. Calder Park, the new trail, is open there. Brooklyn Park is open with a new playground and new pathways to the playground. And then Adelaide Joy Rogers Park is almost open. It is open. The trails are open. It's our staff that is putting in the playground. And when I was out there last week, they were about halfway done. I don't know if they've finished that playground install yet. So that's almost done. And then the small playground that used to be up by City Park Pool has been moved down by the City Park baseball fields. And that installation is done. So that playground is open again. City Park Pool, moving along. Little bumps here and there, but so far, so good. Going pretty well on all of that. Mercer Athletic Fields is also moving along with the change in the baseball softball fields there. That's being managed by the school district, but that's moving along. And then in the planning phases, we're finishing up the final details on the City Park Shelter project for next year, sheltered restrooms. And then the North Market Square Park public meetings will be coming up this fall. We'll be doing North Market Square Park. And then finally, we are finishing bid documents now for the roller park at Terra Mill. We got the federal funds released. We will be going out to bid on that soon. So a lot of things happening, a lot of things finishing, and a lot of things getting ready to go as far as our park projects.
Where's yep. the North Market Square Park going to be?
It's the same place where it's at, North Market Square, up by Mann Elementary, yeah. It's just pretty much just a playground replacement and some enhancements to the field area that's pretty much used by the elementary school right there.
Sure. And it's a ball field project at Mercer is being managed by the school district?
Correct.
Is it on schedule?
It is like City Park Pool. It is having little bumps here and there. I believe it is still somewhat on schedule. I don't know the specifics on that one.
With them managing the project, are there any stipulations or any obligations in the contract if it was to stretch on beyond a certain amount of time that work would stop so that?
So the fields that we use for recreational use should be, they aren't being really affected, fields 2 and 3.
But access to them is...
That'll be, yeah, difficult. I don't have the answer to that at this time. So, yeah, let's hope that it, at this point, I'm still going on the, it's yeah, going to right. be done on time. So, yeah.
When is the North Market Square meeting?
We don't have it scheduled yet. We have a consultant on board. We will, next week, myself, Brad, Tyler, and Josh are all at our National Parks and Rec Conference. So the week after that, we'll get a lot more meetings scheduled again and get rolling on our next round of projects. So
was anyone hired for Joyce Carroll?
Yes, and I will leave it to Brad.
Oh, that is okay. And Brad.
Yeah, and then we'll turn it over to Brad.
Okay. Thanks.
Instead of leaning over the microphone, I've made it to the big kids table now. All right, another project that we were able to cross off the list was the Mercer swimming pool roof project. Mercer Pool was closed for the last month, which, you know, obviously is not ideal because City Park Pool was closed this summer as well, but we made it work. We extended hours over here at RAL so people had additional hours to be able to swim. And we worked with the school district. They started their swim season in about mid-August. And so we worked with them to bring their practices over here. And so we did open Mercer Park Pool yesterday. So we're back on schedule and back in business with regular hours there. Also, Fin and Feather recently announced that they plan to vacate the rental facility for the boat rental facility down at Terry Trueblood Recreation Area. This fall, they're gonna be selling all their equipment. And so that leaves a vacated property. We were thinking about what we wanted to do with that. We took a look around, did a walkthrough 2-3 weeks ago, and we're going to propose that that's gonna become an enclosed shelter that's gonna be available to the public. It's got that nice patio area there. It's got a lot of great natural sunlight coming in. We're looking at replacing the door to the north as a glass overhead door. So there's going to be a lot of ability for people to be able to rent it out for their parties, for their gatherings. It'll be a nice space that's kind of like an in between the open air pavilions that are out there and the TTRA lodge. So it'll be kind of a nice price point for them. We'll have the tables, chairs. We'll also use it for programming. We're particularly looking at some nature education programs that will be great out there as well. So we're looking forward to that. Megan Hill too is our new program supervisor for Arts STEAM summer camps and nature education. We had that position vacant for about 8 months, and I am very happy to say that we now have that position filled. And she started with us August 11th. And was able to onboard her pretty quickly. She actually had been working for the Climate and Sustainability Office with the city for the last 3 years. And prior to that, had worked with Green Iowa AmeriCorps and also was a part-time employee here with us in that same program area and also customer service. So she knows a lot of our staff, has worked well with them in the past. We collaborated a lot with her when she was in the climate and sustainability office with some different events. So great working relationship with her and glad to have her on board. A couple upcoming events that I want to highlight. We have our third year of the Get Outside, an outdoor recreation festival that's going to be taking place at City Park on Sunday, September 28th. We're partnering with about 14 or 15 organizations in the community to bring a lot of different recreation opportunities for people to be able to try out. It's usually a fun day where we get a lot of people that come out and they get their hands trying a lot of different things. So looking forward to that. That's going to be 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sunday, September 28th. And then we also have our Indigenous Peoples Day, which we're going to be changing that up a little bit this year. In the past 3 years, we've had that actually on Indigenous Peoples Day in the evening. But in October, it starts to get a little darker sooner. And so it's been a little bit more of a challenge for us to be able to host the event that we'd like to host out there. So we're actually going to be doing the Indigenous Peoples Day on Sunday, October 12th from 2 to 5:30 in the afternoon. And so we'll have a lot of different entertainment and groups represented there as well. So it'll be a great event. And do you have any questions?
I do about the Terry Trueblood. And I read something that the city council decides. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to or someone.
About the lake levels.
Yeah,
so that's been an ongoing issue with us. The lake levels at Terry Trueblood no longer support the paddleboarding and the canoeing rental that we had. If you go out there, the water level is quite a ways out. We had thought at first that it was just low water levels from the river a couple years ago. As you know, this year the water levels have come back up. The lake has not returned. So it is a larger millions of dollars issue than any of us have. We don't know how to fix it, basically. We've consulted with a couple different people, and we think it's because of the development that happened to the housing developments that have happened to the east side have diverted the stormwater that was coming in from over there. Not really sure. But yeah, that's unfortunately the case, that there is no economical way at this point to, quote, fill it or dredge it or either of those things.
So it's just going to be like an empty-ish basin of...
It'll be a nice wetland and natural area, unless we find out some other option. We continue to look, but it would take quite a bit to restore it to the water levels that it was.
Since we've had extended hours for swimming at R.A. Lee here, might we continue that since people are used to that pattern now?
At this time, we don't plan to keep those hours. We had extended the hours from 1 to 4 in the afternoon.
And no longer?
We do swim lessons.
Okay.
That's definitely one of our biggest impediments to pushing it.
I see. Okay.
And an email from Cycling Without Age people. They were wondering about, you know, the H2O building.
Yes.
And said they're going to store their adapted bike, a Trishaw. It's like a e-bike that you can give people rides in at Ashton House. And I was just wondering how much storage you have at Ashton, like if we had other, or I do volunteer with them.
Yeah.
So if we had other adapted bikes or we got another Trishaw, is there room for more than one bike there for storage?
I think there is. Mallory's been working with that
group
as well, and she actually even mentioned that today when I met with her. And I think that they're planning on maybe having a couple bikes. She kind of oversees that facility for us, and so she was thinking that was going to be possible in the basement to be able to have some additional storage.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, they had also asked about the H2O Lodge building as another location, and I did let their leadership know that
I was on that email.
Oh, were you on that?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't see you on that.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't going to be a possibility because
of
our plans now for the enclosed shelter.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So just wondering how much room there is. There's a guy has this trailer for full of adapted bikes, and like the Community Inclusion Club had a day, and it was really fun, you know, going around Terry Trueblood, but there's so many trails by Ashton. We could, you know, do that too.
So the garage area at Ashton House is Project Green's storage space.
Oh, okay.
So the large part of what you might be thinking of it that we have available storage is already taken by their equipment and their things. So
I wasn't really thinking of anything. I was just wondering how much. Yeah,
and she did mention the trailer as well, and I don't think the trailer was going to work out.
Yeah.
I think she did ask about, like, talk about another bike, though, and that could be possible.
Maybe a couple of bikes would fit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Do you have, like, a time frame for when that enclosed shelter might be done? I mean, I was, like, super.
We're putting it in our budget request, so.
Next summer at the earliest.
Yeah, so it's funding dependent. Yeah, if we actually get the funding for it.
And would that be managed just through, like, a city reservation system or, like, through the Davis Center?
It would, yeah. We would figure out the reservation system for that. And it'd be probably something similar to City Park Pool, because that will also have a community space. During the summer, it's a lot easier because we have the pool open, you know, for a lot of those hours. But during the rest of the year, we'll be coming up with a system for that as well. So for
those of you that were involved with the recreation facilities and program master plan a few years ago, if you'll remember, it called out a need for some satellite programming type spaces. So it's kind of exciting we're getting to that point. We have Ashton House that we added on as a programming space. City Park Pool is going to have an indoor programming space. And then if we can do TTRA, that's three of them in three different, Ashton and City Park are kind of close, but we're trying to fulfill parts of what that master plan called out for. So.
Very good. Okay, so we can go to commission time. Rachel, do you have anything?
Sure. I was wondering, I was at City Park the other day and.
Right. Sorry.
And that's okay. And I noticed there are about 20 old growth oaks that are behind a fence, and, you know, so far they're still.
Around the pool?
Around the pool, like fenced in the construction area. And I just wanted to make sure that they're.
We are trying our darndest to, I mean, don't put darndest in the minutes. That's probably not a good term. We are, I mean, that has been something we have been working with the contractor on since before they started. So trees are fenced off primarily at the drip line to keep them safe, but they're going to be impacted with construction being that so close. We have a couple different places where we've gotten closer than we expected, but we've left the trees. So it's an ongoing conversation about that, but know that that is one of our top priorities and top goals. I would love to say we're going to save them all. My guess is a few of them will fall within years of the facility being completed. They're just of that age, and they're getting that type of impact from all the construction. So, yeah.
And I just want to make sure they know, the construction team is aware that this was a high priority for
it
people involved.
It has been
involved
mentioned multiple times.
Okay.
Michael?
I have nothing.
Okay. Caleb?
Well, now I'm kind of curious about that. How are you evaluating if the trees are safe to remain?
We get our arborists out there from our staff.
It's all internal city staff.
We've had, I think, Mark Vitash from the state's been out there on at least one of them as well, if we don't, you know, if there's any question. We have a number of experts looking at all of these, and honestly, with trees, you just don't know sometimes. Right. You know, we're doing our best to judge their health going forward, but we just you don't know everything on it.
So. I'd love to see them stay too. Just the catastrophic event of them falling.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah. I know. I just evaluated that, so I have nothing else.
Jeff, do you want to add anything?
I have a couple things. Yeah, the aquatics page needs some updates with the new pool punch program update thing.
Okay.
You can get to aquatics programs and activities page in a couple different ways, and they don't only accept in one place. Talk about the new pool punch cards for the pool.
Okay.
Will be helpful. There was some a couple folks told me they had some communications misunderstanding about RAL closing on Sunday early. And I was just wondering if it would be possible in the future. We have the sign on the door about facility hours, but those are not the pool hours. Even if the pool hours change, we could have maybe that on the outside doors as well. That would really make it clear for real easily to see what the hours are and when they start.
The signs on the door, we try not to change unless it's an emergency type of change. But we'll look at, let us look into that and think about how we could do that.
And that's it. I appreciate the loss presentation a lot. That was great. Thank you.
So went to the new College Green Park a couple weeks ago. That was pretty fun. So it was packed. It was cool. After the farmer's market. So everybody's just like climbing all over it. And then I had like a little like party at Happy Hollow with people. And I get a lot of people asking about the new Happy Hollow Park, the bridge that goes across on the playground, like the arms on them are like super wide out and kind of like lower. And so we just like the little kids that climb on it. I think it seems like an accessibility thing. Like,
okay.
So like potentially a wheelchair could go over it or something. I'm not sure. Just the way the bridge is built on the playground, the arms that you would hold onto are like flared out from the bridge and they're super low. So just a lot of like panic parents anytime a kid that was less than like 5 was climbing on the bridge because they could pretty easily like fall through the hole on the bridge. I'm sure there's a reason why it was built that way. I'm just curious as to why that was. Something like people know what to understand.
I'll have to look at it. I'm not familiar with that off the top of my head, so I'll have to look at it for sure.
That's it for me.
I just have one thing, the Sand Prairie Park. I think, did Tyler say that was like a high point in Iowa City? Like, anyway, I tried to find it and I couldn't find it. I went to the address on the website and it was just like, well, it was in someone's backyard for a while. And then I went down the street and I was like, I think this is just, I could see Wetherby Park from it.
Yeah, it is, it's kind of, the corner almost touches Wetherby Park, so you were close. Okay. It's an interesting park in that because it's a prairie preserve, we don't sign it.
There's no sign, okay.
There may be a sign, but we don't encourage a lot of use at this time because there's so much going on with the prairie preservation in that area.
Okay.
So we could take you out there. Tyler can take you out and show you around and stuff. He may have also been talking about some other property we might be getting that's also a really high point, not Sand Prairie. But
I'll ask Tyler when we see him next.
Yeah, we'll get you out there. But you are correct. We get that question every once in a while. There's no trails in it. There's no anything yet. Because it is one of the last remnant prairies, we've done a lot of restoration work and are trying to keep it more ecological focused than people focused.
Okay.
So, I only know because they burned it this spring.
Yeah.
Oh, so you know where it is. Okay. Well,
there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Okay.
There's prairie there. Come on.
No, you're right. There's no trail. There's the trail, I think, on the south end that kind of goes back into the, it's kind of on the edge of it. It's right there off of Sand Road. I mean, it's directly across the street from the parking lot for the
softball complex.
Yeah. Oh, I was back in like covered wagon because the address is 1151.
You're into what's currently farmed future subdivision development.
Where did you park when you went there?
I live in the neighborhood. I just went there.
Oh, okay.
It connects all the way from Napoleon Park all the way back to that address. So that's the start of the address and it goes all the way through.
Oh.
So it's pretty widespread there, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe someday. All right. That's all I have. Thank you. Motion to adjourn. There you go. Jeff's got
second.
And Michael second. All right. Meeting adjourned.